arming a live at Buchenwald. 8 years later, in the spring of 1945, that the world officially learned of Nazi Germany's concentration camps. This NBC just didn't figure the camps were newsworthy. In the post-war era, the broadcast entertainment industry was transformed by television. And again, the NAB was right there playing an important role. In a speech before the NAB in 1961, FCC Chairman Newton Minow, President John F. Kennedy's appointee to head the commission, called TV a vast wasteland. Quoting from Mr. Minow, "When television is good, nothing is better. But when television is bad, nothing is worse. I invite you to sit down in front of your TV set and keep your eyes glued to that set until the station signs off. I can assure you that you will observe a vast wasteland. You will see a procession of game shows, violence, audience participation shows, formula comedies about totally unbelievable families, blood and thunder, mayhem, violence, sadism, murder, Western bad men, Western good men, private eyes, gangsters, more violence, and cartoons. And endlessly commercials. Many screaming, cajoling, and offending. And most of all, boredom. True, you will see a few things you enjoy, but they will be few, very few. And if you think I exaggerate, try it." So said FCC Chairman Newton Minow back in 1961. Of course, this was back in the old days when the FCC functioned more in the manner in which it was mandated, as a regulatory rather than a rubber stamp body.
And that was Richard Edmondson from San Francisco Liberation Radio, actually the Jolly Roger comedy troupe of what was Free Radio Berkeley, in a tape that we will continue at some point in the future. Right now, however, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm eager to continue with some of the interviews that I got in the last few days, because I'm afraid I'm going to be getting so many more interviews that these interviews will be left behind. If you want to call in, however, and do some live discussion, I'm always open to that. 427-3772 is the phone number here at Free Radio 96.3 FM. We return now to interviews in the corridors outside the Steve Argue trial with people who might have been jurors, but were told to move along. And in essence, they were dismissed from the jury.
We're talking to an individual who is from anonymous, but you were actually probably the last person discharged from the courtroom as an alternate juror before the jury in the Steve Argue case was selected. You yourself are a scientist.
Correct.
And you had a rather severe experience with Santa Clara County law enforcement?
Yeah.
That was about 22 years ago?
No, this was 8 years ago.
And what was that experience?
Basically, a traffic citation, it turned out to be a chaos. The officer lied about the case in the first place. And after he lied about my license has been revoked, and he lost the case, and he was very upset at the time, and he and his colleague is virtually escort me out of Santa Clara County all the way to the Cat's restaurant where Santa Cruz County starts. And,
you were in a vehicle, or you were?
I was in a vehicle, and two motorcycle cops came right behind me.
And did they have verbal communication with you beforehand, saying, get out of town, or did they just follow you?
No, just follow me, and they were just hoping someday they can get a ticket for me, either speeding or make a wrong turn or don't stop or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it was happening.
Trying to intimidate you, perhaps?
Yeah. That was basically the case.
And so you had experience with police officers having lied under oath on the stand?
Oh, sure. And I'm reading about it. And apparently the reason I had to say this because that's a fact. And I didn't want to be...
Untruthful?
Well, I just can't do that.
No. Well, I think it's also appropriate that the jury hear that there certainly is an experience of some individuals that police have not always told the truth.
It's unfortunate.
Even under oath.
Right. As I mentioned, bad apples is in every bunch. So, I'm not trying to generalize the police department. However, is in my opinion, just having more and more and more police, that brings more and more disqualified people to this kind of work. That's pretty much what I think.
Thank you very much.
Okay, it's about 9:15 on September 9th evening. We're at Loudoun Nelson Park. We have about, what, 5, 10 witnesses, as Officer Eveleth is ticketing 3 youthful white male skateboarders, each of them sitting on their boards here near the basketball court.
Unless, of course, they don't show up at court.
Yeah, we were at a Mumia video screening, and Vinny came in and told us that there was skateboarding going on. There was a ticket thing going on here. Vinny, what did you see when you came out?
I saw 3 men sitting on the ground and an officer standing over them. And I immediately assumed that something was amiss. And so I figured you, being the excellent, extraordinary journalist that he is, Mr. Robert Norris.
One of the Free Radio Santa Cruz crew.
Always carrying a tape recorder, unlike myself these days. I've been kind of slacking. I need some money. I need money for a new tape recorder.
Needs money for a new tape recorder, folks.
But that's my problem. But anyway, that's what I saw, and so I grabbed you, and a bunch of people came out. It's unfortunate because it interrupted our whole program, but...
It's really to the point, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess it is.
It's funny because we were just having a program on routine harassment by the Santa Cruz police. And sure enough, here it is.
You know, how Happy John Dine got, you know, murdered by your fellow officers. Wasn't that interesting? Didn't you work with Martin Over quite a bit, Officer Eveleth? Wasn't he your partner often? What was that Officer Martin Over pulled off of the bloody body?
This is Officer Carey.
Uh-huh, that's Connor right there.
That 4 witnesses saw. Hours, and they're violating that law, or they're going to search.
Actually, there are public events happening
tonight?
Inside. I don't think it's...
Are you the one they're sending into the liquor store to try and buy alcohol?
So Officer Eveleth has informed us that we have to leave. I don't know if I agree with that, Officer Eveleth. So we're witnessing a police arrest here.
I'm not holding a toy gun.
Right.
I know.
So guys, when you're finished, come on over and we'll interview you about this. Seems like Officer Eveleth does not want to be witnessed closely in what's going on, so he's using the park codes to try to restrict us from observing what's going on.
So stay out there in the back deck and leave now.
As soon as I finish talking, I'd be happy to leave. So anyway, come on over.
I don't want you to get a ticket.
Well, you might want to have to write about 7 or 8 tickets, and we can all go to court on that, Officer. No, actually, we have right to access the park. We have right to walk through the park. This facility is open, and this park is open until the facility is closed.
Officer, or is it Sergeant Eveleth now? Were you not informed the park's closed? You're in violation of the law.
I demand that you give that officer.
Let me get my bag. So we have 3 undercover officers here essentially trying to drive away witnesses to a citation. I'm being threatened with arrest if I don't leave the area, in this case being a citation, when all I'm trying to do is simply observe what is happening. The 3 individuals are sitting on their skateboards.
You guys, you got the whole deck team out here. You might want to check their faces. Hey, Vinny, now how many people are here?
Maybe 15.
Where are
they? There were.
A lot of them got scared.
Really?
So this is one of the local police officers approaching.
That's Officer Hatcher.
Officer Hatcher.
178.
So they've successfully intimidated some of us, including myself, from
That's
backing further away. And Nassim is distributing literature to the arrestees.
I'm so glad he's still got a job on the force. You know, I know I sure feel good about my tax dollars going to pay for a murderer still on the force.
They're ticketing skateboarders, and they're trying to drive away witnesses who are trying to watch this. These are police officers who are telling us it's illegal to be in the park.
Maybe you made a mistake, but you sure didn't pay for it.
Officers, these individuals are walking through the park. Why aren't you warning them? I hear no response from the officers who were threatening me with arrest a few moments ago.
They were, anything?
Yes, they were.
They're doing what?
They're in the park.
Being in the park after still open.
Officer Evelyn's opportunistic use of repressive laws to shield himself from observation seems to me to be inappropriate in this situation.
Where their paychecks come from, that it comes from the citizenry. If only people would remember who they work for.
Dave LeFevre.
You know?
Dave LeFevre, the whole crew.
Why is Officer...
Don't move! Remember that? Fuck off! Blam, blam! Don't move!
Becky Johnson is speaking to Officer Carey, reminding him of what happened 2 years ago with Officer Don.
The night you shot Happy John dying to death on that sidewalk, that's what happened, right?
So one wonders why there's such a convocation of police officers when all that's happening is one officer is writing three skateboarding tickets. It's unclear why the police car has been driven up onto the basketball court and is parked partially on the grass here at Loudoun Nelson Park. This is Officer Everett's car. It is now, about 9:35, Becky Johnson is pursuing Officer Carey, angry. How you doing?
You are a cop.
What's your name?
Tiffany.
And Tiffany, are you connected with the police department?
No, that's my boyfriend, the last one over there.
Perhaps you'll get a ticket for standing in the park waiting for him to get his ticket finished.
No, I asked one guy, I said, I'm going to wait, and he said, okay.
That's fair enough. So I think I'll wait with you if that'd be okay.
Okay, yeah.
Let's wait together, shall we? That sounds good. So you've been given permission by an officer to wait here in the park.
Yes.
I would say that I think I would like to stay with you in order to interview your friend, your boyfriend.
Would you like to? Okay, Shane, you want to get interviewed? She's at home.
So what happened? What's your name?
My name is Tiffany. I went to the store to get cigarettes. And I came up here to give my boyfriend a couple, and he's sitting here on the lawn. And what happened is two out of three have warrants. So they didn't go to their court dates, and they have to go again.
What were they ticketed for?
My boyfriend, I don't know, he has a bunch of warrants, but they just don't know about it. They just haven't found them, so.
Don't say that so loudly.
Yeah, I know. No, I think it's just for either skateboarding tickets or registration in the car or something like that. I don't know.
And you're listening to a tape of an incident that happened outside Loudoun Nelson Center about 9 o'clock at night on September 9th, right in the midst of the end of a screening of To Serve and Protect and a Mumia video being thrown by the Santa Cruz Five. And there were about 30 folks in the audience watching that when cop watcher Vincent Lombardo came in and said, quick, bring your tape recorder because three skateboarders are being harassed. And I went outside and you heard some of that. There's actually it's a much longer segment. It involves interviews with several of the skateboarders, and which is actually kind of pertinent because, as you know, skateboarding is a hot issue here in Santa Cruz with the endless promises to set up a skateboarding park and, of course, no actual results, no real progress. I guess that's going to be coming up at a special meeting in October, or maybe at a regular council session in October. I was able to, I talked today with a council member, Christopher Crone, who told me there was also going to be a special meeting the first Tuesday in October, I believe it is, around at a high school where the council will talk to young people about youth issues. So hopefully instead of making decisions for young people, they'll actually start listening to young people. I don't think that's likely to happen, but supposedly this is the show that they're engaging in that kind of behavior coming up. Lots of interviews here. I'm going to try to give you a few more. There also was some actual news in the media today. The Santa Cruz Sentinel had a story by Mae Wong, who's Wong as usual. I talked to her about it. She had a story where she, on page 2, talks about the Argue case. And it has a number of small inaccuracies, but more important, the broad dimensions of the problems that the Argue defense is experiencing with a biased judge, Judge Robert Attuck, a prosecution that is really kind of a vengeful, a kind of politically motivated prosecution, like many are in Art Danner's district attorney's, not Art Danner anymore, Ron Ruiz, is it? But I guess it's this, the district attorney's office, whether it's run by Art Danner or Ron Ruiz, it doesn't really seem to matter. They proceed on headlong with what they're doing. But in order to spice up the show, we're going to do a couple of recaps here. At the courthouse, I also ran into Jerry Henry. Jerry, you may remember, is an activist and a street minister out at the Aptos Shopping Center who himself has been running through and run through the ringer by the DA's office for trying to defend the rights of young people out there. But actually, we have a quick call before we play that tape. Let's see what the caller has got to say. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Welcome to Santa Cruz. All you need is love.
This sounds
don't
like...
Don't throw your hate around.
This sounds like that that love monger, David Silva.
Yeah, what a rep.
Well, David, have you been listening to our show?
Actually, Robert, I just walked in the door and caught the little bit just now. And it looked like you were going to go into some tapes, so I thought I'd just promo the latest signage suggestion. Welcome to Santa Cruz. What was it?
Go to sleep, go to jail?
No.
No.
Love, love is all you need.
How about Sergeant Clark's is all you need to go after hate crimes? After he just said today in the Sentinel that the first two hate criminals of the year were arrested. I guess that was another one of the stories in today's paper.
Yes, it was a really... It made for our weekly petition turn-in a lot more active today. I noticed a lot of people brought the petitions in today where they hadn't been before.
And you're talking about, of course, the hate-free zone. Yeah. Petition. Now, what I noticed about that article, of course, is it showed again Clark has no interest in including attacks on homeless people as part of the hate crime status.
You know, Pat Clark and everybody that's involved with this. And
Pat Clark has to be distinguished from Sergeant Steve Clark. Let's keep those Clarks
separate.
We
keep trying to remind the police to not accidentally drop that off the list somehow.
Yeah, somehow, yeah.
So, it's true, Robert. It happens every single time. But we haven't, and the working group for a hate-free zone hasn't.
Well, I know you're also, there's also, of course, the Rent Stabilization Initiative. I spoke today to Christopher Crone, and I asked him, gosh, why don't you not only sign on with Fitzmaurice, Sugar, and Rotkin, of all people, to support putting rent stabilization on the ballot, but also sign on to simply passing it as a city council ordinance.
Yeah, it's just an advisory measure.
Yeah, as an advisory matter.
An advisory measure.
You know, I mean, could the council do something in that regard? Could it actually pass a... you know, some sort of general intention that it would like to establish rent control and just make that assertion or rent stabilization in some way?
Well, it either has to accept the initiative, or it really can't. I don't know if it can endorse an advisory measure. That's kind of strange, just because it can't endorse something advising itself. Mm-hmm. Either they're up to speed or they're not, and it looks like they're not. So I think they could make some kind of saying, you know, they could start the process. Why wait till March to start the town hall meetings, to start the process of, like, finding what is the magic formula that will stabilize rent in Santa Cruz? It certainly has to take and consider granny units and widows who make their living supplementing their, you know, measly income with granny units. And it has to take in account the impact of the university, and it has to take into account the Silicon Valley succubus. You know, it has to take these things into account, and it has to be fair to as many people as possible, and that's what will stabilize. It's not just a matter of freezing rent. You know, it's maybe even lowering them.
And in the meantime, stop arresting people who provide their own shelter.
Welcome to Santa Cruz. You are not homeless here. Santa Cruz is your home because we love you.
Uh-huh.
Welcome to Santa Cruz.
Come to Catherine Byers' house? Would that be the...
don't bait me, Robert. Right now, I'm suing the city. I can't talk about them personally.
Oh, well, I would hope not.
Okay, talk to you later.
Thanks, David.
Bye.
And that was activist David Silva, who has been working with the Homeless Issues Task Force, as well as his own Hate-Free Zone initiative, as well as probably a dozen other projects. The Homeless Issues Task Force, for those of you who are interested in that particular topic, is having its next public meeting on Monday at 5:30 at the ABC room of the Santa Cruz Municipal Auditorium. They actually, I denounced this group or ridiculed it repeatedly as a task farce, but, you know, they came through last week or 2 weeks ago actually with a resolution that the city council should not just end the sleeping ban, but they should end the entire camping ban, which has actually been the position of a number of intelligent, well-educated, actually even prestigiously placed organizations like the Community Action Board for at least half a decade. So it's not like it's some radical new proposal, but in this nitpicking, niddling, gutless climate that we have SCAN people who won't even endorse ending the sleeping ban again, even though for 3 years SCAN has supposedly been against the sleeping ban. Now they can't even censure the council members who have made it criminal for people to sleep outside or criminal for people to shelter themselves. Anyway, at least the Homeless Issues Task Force did make that resolution, and now I guess they're finding a way to present that in an effective and articulate way to City Council and hopefully as a message to the community. And I'm hoping that at the next meeting of the Homeless Issues Task Force, they're going to establish a legal subcommittee that's going to start pressuring the courts to make sure cops don't issue citations for sleeping, blankets, or camping except on complaint and after warning, as has been mandated by the City Council last December when Christopher Crone's Sleeping is a Human Right resolution passed the City Council. I'm going to ask that they make sure that the fines are not $162 but $54, as supposedly was passed under the Byers sleeping ban. A little bit less of the torture, but the same old torture. But even that, it hasn't gotten through to the courts yet. As of, 2 days ago, when Dennis Rehm, who went to court with an individual to help him, Rehm is a vehicular dweller who himself is fighting a rather interesting fight around the issue of whether you have to pay for a sleeping ban ticket if you are a homeless person and if you have no money and if you have to pay under threat of jail. There is such a thing as you cannot be imprisoned for debt in this country if you refuse to pay that ticket. In fact, there is an interesting argument that they can do no more than sue you civilly and essentially put a lien on whatever you've got. So if you ever get anything, then you have to pay it, but you don't have to pay it anyway immediately if you're impoverished, which would tend to some extent close down the process. I have an incoming call, and I hope we'll see what that call's all about.
You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, hi, David. Bob LaMonica. I thought I would clear
now,
up
wait a minute.
Stuff.
I'm Robert.
Oh, I'm Robert. I'm sorry. I apologize. I wanted to clear up some stuff that was said about rent control.
Sure, go ahead, Bob.
It's very, I think...
And you are, in fact, an individual to do it because you're one of the individuals, one of the primo individuals circulating that initiative in spite of strange behavior by Officer Howes and the Santa Cruz Police Department.
Well, what I wanted to say is that a rent rollback is impossible legally. It's not going to happen. What rent control will do and what the successful models do, like Berkeley and Santa Monica, mm-hmm. is they establish a formula for annual rate adjustments, which are usually tied to the consumer price index. So, for example, Berkeley's annual rate adjustment for 1999 was 1% or $8, whichever's less. That's what rent control does. It stabilizes. But there'll be no rollback. There'll be no freeze. There'll be a base rent whereupon all this is built. The first step of rent control.
I've heard a lot of base landlords, but I don't know about base rent.
Is a base rent.
Let me ask you this, Bob.
Yes.
Let's suppose a majority of the city council called you up and said, Bob, we like your initiative, but we don't want to have to wait till March or November. How can we take action at the next city council meeting to initiate this process? How would you advise them?
Proclamations. If they felt so moved to do something formally, a proclamation.
And what kind of a proclamation could they make?
They could make a proclamation of support. But individually or collectively. I mean, any politician can do that. All political bodies have the power to
Wait a minute. What is the
power
can,
to pro-
can you read us the text of the rent stabilization initiative? Have you got it there nearby?
Well, it's extremely brief. Basically, what this is an enabling device to provide a mandate for the city council to enact rent control. It says here, shall the Santa Cruz City Council provide for a rent stabilization board to be initially appointed by the city council and thereafter elected by the city voters, empowering the board to regulate residential rents. Now, what rent control will be in practice is, of course, shaped by legislation. There have been several legislative acts over the last 20 years that have modified rent control, the bigger two being vacancy decontrol, which is that when a tenant moves out of the unit, out of the rent-stabilized unit, the property owner can do whatever they want
with
the rent.
That's the Costa-Hawkins gutting of
rent
control.
Well, it makes it modest. It has to work. It has to be feasible for property owners also. There's got to be a median where this can function on.
Mm-hmm.
So I happen to agree with vacancy decontrol, okay?
Mm.
And then once again, of course, when the apartment is re-rented, that becomes the base rent whereupon annual rate adjustments are applied.
So actually the way that the city council could act if they wanted would not be so much to support by proclamation this thing does is it advises them to proceed with a rent stabilization board that first they appoint and later becomes elected. What they need to do is they need to sort of roll up their sleeves and say, okay, we like the idea, we're going to establish a rent stabilization board and we're going to appoint it and we're also going to set up a process for electing it. That would be the next step if they wanted to take it, right?
I doubt whether that is in the realm of reality. What is within the realm of reality is what Mr. Rockin has done since the very start, which is to endorse the effort publicly.
No, but I'm saying is if they wanted, four council members, if they wanted to take the next step, it would be to begin the process of actually working out legislation that would involve real immediate consequences so that families that are being forced out on the streets would actually have some kind of recourse.
I don't believe that'll happen, Robert. I don't believe that's what's.
But that is what
ahead.
Could be done in theory. Is that correct?
In theory, yeah, sure. A lot of things are possible in theory.
Okay.
One other thing I want to get in here about rent control and the impact of legislation over the last 20 years in California is that single-family dwellings would, in all likelihood, be exempt unless there is an attached unit. A single-family dwelling will be exempt from rent control. And that's also a part of Costa-Hawkins and the Ellis Act, another act that modified rent control. So those two main legislative actions have impacted rent control dramatically in California. However, the basic principle remains a rent stabilization board with the power to regulate residential rents. Two main functions, annual rate adjustment. The other main function is individual rate adjustments. Landlords and tenants can petition for individual rate adjustments. And they're granted one of the more usual ways they're granted is on capital improvements.
Of course, all we're talking about right now is a general advisory initiative to be voted on by the voters if you can get together 4,000 signatures of citizen residents, right?
There were several reasons why this was the correct approach. The one reason was is that if the concept flies, it'll happen, just in general. The other reason was that rent control has been so significantly modified by legislation since the last wave 20 years ago, that the correct approach was to go this route. And in the final analysis, the city council will have the authority and power
to
shape
the
ordinance.
I don't know that the voters of California would have voted for Costa-Hawkins or this other gutting of the rent control. You don't see it as gutting, but I do.
Their representatives, right?
No. Representatives take their own actions, and they're usually subject to all kinds of pressures from lobbyists and moneyed interests. And I don't believe that necessarily representatives represent people. It depends on the situation. So my point is, I think had individuals had an option to vote on the merits of this, and again, I don't know what percentage of California is renters, but I suggest it's probably a significantly larger percentage
than
landlords.
You could launch a statewide initiative.
Right, good luck.
I think it makes rent control all the more modest and feasible.
Well, Bob, obviously, I'm more impatient than you are, and I don't want to sit around and wait for 6 months to get some sort of advisory thing. But I don't dispute that it's not a good idea if it's the only alternative. Let me just say that if people want to reach you, they can of course attend the Java House 3 p.m. Saturday meetings that you're holding. Isn't that accurate still?
Yes, that's accurate.
And your phone number for folks who want to do petitioning or otherwise support the effort is?
457-2670.
I appreciate that. Anything you want to add?
The system can be worked with. Mm-hmm. The system is, generally speaking, good.
Mm.
And it's important to find ways to work with the system if we're going to really be serious about changing social policy.
I appreciate that, Bob.
And I think rent control is a key example of that.
Let's hope
so. Santa Cruz in 1999.
I'll talk to you.
If this passes at the ballot in March, it'll happen.
I hope so. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, I'm a little impatient tonight with waiting around. I think that if we have a liberal city council, progressive city council, a city council concerned with the majority of the voters who are renters, that they should take action to protect those renters. And frankly, I've got little patience sitting around waiting for advisory measures. But I recognize that if that's the only thing that the city council members are willing to do, at least Bob has taken the issue, Bob LaMonica, the man we just spoke to, off of dead center, no question about it. And if you want to get in touch with Bob, 3 o'clock, Java House, Saturday, check it out, or give him a call. By the way, if you miss any of the numbers that we're giving out on the air, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's my off-air number. I put on another hat when I leave the studio. I become a worker with Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, HUFF. And the phone number for that is, of course, 423-HUFF. But if you want to tune into the radio station and you wish to talk on the air on any of these issues, the number is 427-FRSC, abbreviation for Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is what you're listening to, 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm your host, Bathrobe Spear Robert Norse. This is Bathrobe Spear's Broadsides Thursday and Sunday shows, Thursday from 6 to 8, Sunday from 11 in the morning to 1:30 in the afternoon. Let's get back to interviews with folks around the courthouse. Again, we were talking about Jerry Henry. Let's hear what Jerry had to say a day or two ago, updating us on the Aptos Rancho Del Mar situation.
The courthouse, it's about 2:20. We're talking to Jerry Henry. Hi, Jerry.
Hi.
Jerry, you're a week or two beyond the dropping of charges for fighting words, a misdemeanor crime where they accuse you of calling yourself a nigger when you were talking about your essential second-class citizenship in the Aptos Shopping Center for trying to advise young people of their rights there and stop merchants and sheriffs and security guards from driving them off. But during that two-week period of time, it really hasn't been over for you.
No, I think Labor Day weekend we had 9 deputies at the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center. They were wanting us to seek some kind of permit to have a petition signed. We had an informational picket up in front of God Shocks.
Tell us about that picket.
Well, we were just trying to inform the citizens exactly what was going on out at Rancho, that there was a social cleansing program that really isn't too pretty to see.
How many pickets were picketing?
There was just Jeff Hickey and myself, and we were getting petition signs along with informing people. We're close to 400 signatures now.
And the petition states?
That we want them to cease all their discrimination and live up to the State Civil Rights Under Act at the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center.
Which would allow you and anyone else who is engaging in violent or abusive behavior to use the public accommodations there?
It would give us free access to all the businesses, so as long as we weren't doing something wrong to the businesses, mm-hmm. So we have the right to use the businesses.
And currently, of course, you're excluded from Gottschalk's, Rancho Liquors, and the Coffee Roasting Company?
Well, just yesterday, I think maintenance from the Rancho Shopping Center told me if I kept it up, they were going to be throwing me out of there again. It seems the day of my trial, that was what they asked for, or the day before my trial, Jim Jackson with the DA's office asked if I'd sign a letter that I'd leave Rancho Del Mar and not come back, that he would drop all the charges, and that still seems to be the issue out there, that they just want me to leave town. One of the maintenance workers said to me yesterday that why didn't I just leave and be happy, and I don't know how you do that.
Well, I know the feeling because I myself have been ordered out of various public areas, and I've told people no. It's really become a matter of principle, even though I might not choose to even return to this public area of my own accord, because who cares about the bookshop Santa Cruz where I'm barred from, or Java House where I used to be barred for 7 years. I was barred from the Java House. But, you know, you're in a position where you actually have to worry about arrest out there, and I guess you've dealt with this by maintaining a kind of a calm disposition. You carry a tape recorder with you. I see you have it now. So you say that on a number of occasions in the last couple of weeks, the harassment has continued against you and against others out there and our young people?
Oh, quite emphatically, yeah. Yes. And, you know, I have nightmares and stuff at night. I was just telling you a little while ago, you know, generally my nightmares and stuff have been about the cops. Now it seems to be going about the DAs and the judges. And I don't know where this is going to end up. But I know if you start running, I don't know if you ever get a stop.
Now, if somebody, if folks want to sign your petition, is there a way they can get in touch with you or with Richard or with other folks doing this?
We've just basically, these 400 petitions have really came out of the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center itself. And
Where can people call you at a number, or should I give the Huff Line number for people to call?
I'd say the Huff Line number.
For those who are interested in this, getting more information about Jerry Henry's situation and the question of discrimination at the Aptos Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center, want to show their support for free access to public accommodations, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Anything you want to add, Jerry?
No, I think that about covers it for now. We just can hope that that we'll be left with a little bit of freedom in America.
Well, I think that you, as I say, ignore your rights and they go away.
We'll see you, Robert.
Thank you, Jerry.
Well, me and my friends, we shop downtown, and sometimes we just hang around. But when we get tired and we want to sit, the cops say get up and move it. 'Cause there's no sitting in the city of Santa Cruz, with its redwood trees and its ocean views. It's the home of surfers and sight gurus, but there ain't no sitting in Santa Cruz. Now you better watch out where you set your tail, or you might spend 6 months sitting in jail. If you bum spare change, you might pay a fine, 'cause being poor is now a crime. Go sitting in the city of Santa Cruz, with its redwood trees and its ocean views. It's the home of surfers and sight gurus, but there ain't no sitting in Santa Cruz. You're breaking the law if you try to sit, but we're not gonna stand for it. This sitting law didn't get my vote, so we're gonna sit down and rock the boat. No sitting in the city of Santa Cruz, with its redwood trees and its ocean views. It's the home of surfers and sightgoers, but there ain't no sitting in Santa Cruz. No sitting in the city of Santa Cruz, with its redwood trees and its ocean views. It's the home of surfers and sightgoers, but there ain't no sitting in Santa Cruz. There ain't no sitting in Santa Cruz. Ain't no sitting in Santa Cruz.
Talking and talking to David Silva, Green Party activist, initiator of one of them of the hate crime, hate free, hate see, hate crime. What is it, David? Let's get it straight here.
Initiative for a hate free zone.
And you've also been involved in sort of putting together a presentation to City Council of the camping ban repeal, which kind of happened, so I don't want to say shockingly, but it certainly was a sweeping resolution passed by the Homeless Issues Task Force a week ago.
There was a resolution to repeal the camping ordinance in toto, since it's a makeover, it's a redo, it doesn't work, it's broken, throw the whole thing out, start over again.
Now why is the camping ordinance broken, David? Aren't you kind of one of these wild-eyed radical types who feels people should sleep anywhere and everywhere and poo-poo and throw hypodermic needles around in the parks?
No, I'm not a liberal, and when it comes to definitions this time, I guess I'm not a progressive either. The reality is that it's inhuman, unconstitutional, against every international accord that's ever been written. It's a prohibition, not a regulation of camping and sleeping.
What does
it's a prohibition.
Actually say?
It says that sleeping, with or without accoutrement, is camping, and camping is prohibited.
So you're telling me that this police department is telling us we can't sleep in Santa Cruz if we haven't got a domicile to sleep in?
That's basically, yeah. Any outdoor survival sleeping would criminalize a homeless person.
Now, as I understand it, this, so you were sort of part of a subcommittee, David, or are operating with a subcommittee that
is trying to find a way to present this rather rather strong proposal in the eyes of some. The camping ban repeal is certainly broader than the sleeping ban repeal, wouldn't you say?
Well, yeah, certainly. Certainly it's a much broader concept. So, you know, the subcommittee, I guess our purpose was to sort of finesse the presentation of it. And I think we've done a pretty good job to explain. We did a few whereases and presented our thinking why, you know, it's broken, so it's a do-over.
So the sleeping ban essentially is the law that makes part of that camping law that makes it illegal to sleep between 11 and 8:30 outside or in a vehicle?
That's the sleeping sections, yeah, the sleeping ban.
The camping ordinance also makes it illegal to actually put up a tent or defend yourself against the elements or use cooking equipment even if you have no legal shelter.
Yeah, at any time of day or night, you cannot set up campsite or anything like that.
So there's some who say that, gosh, what do these homeless people want? You know, Cadillacs and jacuzzis, but doesn't this law in essence say you're not even allowed to try to hide under a bridge to set up a tent against a rainstorm or an electrical storm?
Since the law does not provide any option, anywhere to go other than breaking the law, a homeless person, a houseless person, if they're going to sleep at 11 o'clock at night, automatically becomes a criminal as soon as they fall asleep. A houseless person, if they're going to try to protect their children from the elements, becomes a criminal any time, night or day. So the law is not untenable. It's not tenable. There's no way that you can argue to say that, well, at least it's just trying to regulate. It does not regulate. That's the issue here. It's a prohibition. It's a prohibition of basic human rights, and that's not allowed in this world.
Or it shouldn't be.
It's not allowed in this world.
Anything you want to conclude with, David, before we cut you off?
Well, I'm just hoping that the public and the city council and so forth don't do a knee-jerk, reactionary mode response to this, but actually see what the task force is about. The task force, it wants to be about going on with all the business of all the other issues facing homeless persons, not only the human rights issues and civil rights issues of having the right to sleep, but also of all the services that need to be provided, a survey of the amount of homeless. There's a lot of things that need to be done. And with this prohibition, basic, you know, criminalization, it's really a institutional hate crime is what we have in our law. So we need to get rid of that. And we're telling the council, you've declared an emergency. Therefore, you have the power to, like, sidestep zoning. You have all the power to do it. You're already giving yourself
the power. The council has already declared an emergency. Yeah. Is that correct?
They've already declared a shelter emergency.
That gives them three occasions.
Yeah, and most recently, the last council before it went out, that was the last act they did.
1998 shelter emergency. And they've admitted in that particular statement that there is an inadequate shelter for even for vulnerable people, like older people, disabled people, women and children, families, young people.
There's adequate shelter for about 5% of the homeless population, and there's a lot of lack of other services as well. So we need to get on and away from this this vicious syndrome of, like, paranoia, not in my backyard, get out of town if you're homeless. You need to get out of that and start doing real work.
And in fact, the city council has had a whole year to deal with issues of winter shelter, and we're in September, and I'm not aware that they've done anything, are you?
Well, actually, the laws have been around a lot longer. This is the first time they've made a little teeny foray into addressing the real issues instead of making them harsher and more punitive. So they've made it less punitive and made it no longer a misdemeanor if you're caught twice, and just minor micro things. But the thing that I think the your audience should realize is that when you have an institutional hate crime on the books, the homeless don't become the criminals. We're the criminals. In the law, in the eyes of the world court, we are the criminals, and we need to change that.
Thank you, David.
Okay, it's about 10:35. We're in front of Denny's on September 10th, talking to Leif and
Brother Ashley.
And you guys had a encounter with the police last night?
Yes. I was panhandling, trying to get money for a bus ticket to protect us to get to Pennsylvania. And I was jacked up by the cops on Ocean Street, heading towards 117. And they gave me a ticket for panhandling. And then they decided I was on drugs, so they took me all the way out of the way down to the police station, about 3 miles from my camp, to where I had to walk in the middle of the night, back to camp, re-find my boyfriend, leave my dog, could have lost my dog, and I wasn't on the drug at the time. and I was searched, and they almost took my knife and my money, and...
Did they take you? Did they give it back to you?
Yeah, I got everything back.
Now, what time did this incident happen?
About 7
7 or 8. Seven or eight.
And they... The ticket for panhandling, your first or
my first ticket, yeah, but I've been told to leave several times, but at this point, I don't
told
have...
Told to leave where?
To leave right there.
You're panhandling at Filker and whatever the hell the street
Filker
is.
And Ocean.
Near the Ocean Street Extension.
Yeah.
This was after dark, that was the reason they gave you a ticket?
No, it was for panhandling within 10 feet of an intersection. Then I also got run off by a cop on a... Pacific Avenue earlier that day
for
panhandling, which I wasn't. I was waiting on him to go get food at Taco Bell, and I got in trouble. And then
names of the cops?
No,
it's a female. Female undercover cop.
She gave
me
a ticket for crossing a bridge.
Wait a minute, ticket for crossing a bridge? When did this happen?
My birthday, September 2nd.
I thought of a birthday gift.
Then got run off from McDonald's in like March for refusing to leave when we had just gone in and spent like $10 buying breakfast. But we were told we were panhandling and asked to leave, never left. All we were doing was rolling a cigarette in front of the building. And this happened.
Were the police called, or was this just a McDonald's internal?
Oh, no. There were five cops there. A park ranger, RoboCop, another cop, and two motorcycle cops. And the manager or the retarded guy that works there that always runs people up never even said anything to us. We got tickets for refusing to leave. You know, I've heard of things like, I can't even explain it. It's just a retarded.
It sounds strange. Any comments from you, Lee?
They right here next to the freeway, the cops came and just told us, me and Christine recently, they just came right up and said, you guys can't sleep here anymore. So next time you're getting a ticket, slaps his hand on his thing, and it's like...